Hey ladies, I hope you're having a great day. I want to introduce you to a friend of mine, Kelsey Jaeger. She's a certified life coach, a grief coach, and a registered nurse. Her professional experience combined with her personal experience as a widow and a solo parent to four sons gives her a strong foundation and a unique perspective. Kelsey is passionate about providing support and guiding others who are experiencing grief from the death of a loved one. This conversation is beautiful, it is vulnerable, and I hope that you are able to connect parts of your life to what Kelsey's sharing. We cover what it looks like to have self-love and self-compassion. We cover what it is like to grieve and to understand that there is no end point. Time does not heal all wounds. That's just made up stories, and it's like a river, and sometimes it's flowing smoothly, sometimes you're in the rapids, sometimes you feel like you're being sucked under, and what it feels like to compare when you look at the world around you and you wonder, why me? Why is this happening? And how that just really doesn't serve us inside of our healing process. So Kelsey's amazing. I loved getting to know her and hearing her story here, and I love that she helps other women that are going through what she went through and their current stage of grief so she can support them where they are. So enjoy the episode, and I hope you have a beautiful day. Hey sister, are you newly alcohol free but you've been hanging on for dear life, hoping you don't fall backward? Or maybe you're still stuck in the cycle of overdrinking even when you told yourself you would stop? Waking up each day with thoughts of self-loathing? Is your anxiety through the roof so much that you wake up at 3 a.m. with your heart racing and negative thoughts about yourself? You hide it so well, not many people know. Girl, I get you and I see you. I'm Michelle Porterfield, and for so many years I experienced all of this. Here's the deal. Quitting drinking is just the first step. I believe that's why it can be so scary. We know deep down it's more. Once we see what's underneath all the covering up, true freedom is found, and I'm here to help you do just that. So whether you're newly alcohol free or just sober curious, there is freedom on the other side. I can't wait to help you ditch the wine witch, or help you find your mindset breakthrough and reignite your purpose after alcohol. Girlfriend, you are in the right place. Welcome to Set Free Sisterhood. Hey ladies, today I have my friend Kelsey here to share with us today. Thanks for coming on, Kelsey.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Michelle. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited about this conversation because I think that we don't really talk about this in enough or in a more specific personal place. And we're going to talk about grief and navigating grief and what that looks like and what it doesn't look like possibly. So start off by telling us a little bit about you and share a little bit about your story, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. So I am a mom of four beautiful sons, and my husband and I moved from Southern California to Florida about 4 years ago, and so it was right before COVID, you know, hit and made the world crazy. And during that first year when we were here, our two oldest sons were in a motor vehicle accident. And so of course I rushed them to the emergency room. They were both really injured. And in the emergency room, we discovered that our oldest son had a 2-inch brain tumor in his right frontal lobe. Mm-hmm. And so that really threw me for a loop. Our other son suffered from significant injuries and had multiple surgeries. But our oldest son, we discovered the brain tumor because of the accident. So it really was a blessing in disguise. Thankfully, the neurosurgeon was able to remove the entire tumor, and it was benign. So he did not require any radiation or chemotherapy, just rehab from extensive brain surgery. So this was really traumatic and devastating for me. I was juggling two children in surgery in the hospital, and I really did my best to cope, but I wasn't coping that great. Fast forward 4 months later, and things are starting to kind of normalize in our life. And my husband was 39 at the time, and he started feeling sick. He went to the emergency room on January 2nd of 2021. And after being in the hospital for about a week, we discovered that he had acute lymphoblastic leukemia. So I was already experiencing PTSD from my boy's accident, from my son having a brain tumor, and then this blow just really, really took me down. It took me out. And I was not coping well. I was not functioning. I basically had a nervous breakdown and couldn't get out of bed for days on end. And then I realized that nothing was going to change, unless I did something to change. And so I really pulled myself together and, pulled myself out of this deep, deep, dark pit of grief, and, did what I needed to help not only myself, but my husband and my family. My husband did fight the leukemia for 18 months, and eventually he did pass in July of 2022. And so now I am a solo mom and widow, and I've really felt like I was a victim for a long time. You know, I was mad at God. I was mad at the universe. I was angry at the world. I was jealous of other people and them continuing to live their, you know, for lack of a better word, easy lives. And my world was completely shattered. But that victim mindset was not serving me. So I eventually changed my mindset. I did the work. I worked through the trauma. I'm still working through the trauma. I worked through the grief. I'm still working through the grief. And, I just kind of took control of the things that I could control and let go of the rest.
Wow. Thank you for sharing all that. And I had many thoughts that came up through that process of you sharing. And I do agree. I think that, wow, I mean, July 2022, I'm sure that you're continuing to work through it. And I feel like when these are huge life shifts for us, is it true that the worst thing we can say is it gets better with time or whatever? Isn't it more of a, I have always heard of grief like a river, and sometimes it's going smooth and sometimes the rapid hits, but it never really stops. What's kind of been your experience?
You hit the nail on the head. One thing that absolutely makes me cringe is when I hear people say, it will get better with time. Just hold on. Like, it will get better. It's like, that is a huge grief that time heals all wounds. Time does not heal trauma. Time does not heal grief. It only heals when we do the work to move through it. And yes, you are absolutely correct. I love that analogy of grief being like a river. It's constantly flowing and it's constantly pulling you forward, even though at times it feels like you're getting sucked under and it feels mm-hmm. like you're getting pulled backwards. Because grief is messy and there are no stages. It is not a linear process. It is complex and complicated and super messy. And it feels like you're taking two steps forward and five steps.
Mm-hmm.
But really, there is only forward movement. As long as you are doing the work to feel your grief, you are moving forward. And yeah, there is no end point in grief. It's something that is your companion forever. Like mm-hmm. I will forever miss my husband mm-hmm. because I will forever love him. But that doesn't mean I have to let it consume me. It doesn't mean I have to let it define me. I can still have a beautiful life. I can still have joy alongside the grief.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about when you recognize that you were in that victim mindset and what really was the catalyst for you to say no more. This is not helping.
So I was so angry with God and I begged and pleaded and bargained. Like, God, you have the power to move mountains. I know that you have the power to heal my husband. Like, he's a good man. He's a good dad. He's a good husband. Like, just heal him. We have the faith. He has the faith. I know you have the power. And he didn't do it.
Mm.
And so I really struggled with that and really fell into this woe is me, how come some people get a miracle and we aren't type mentality. Why is this happening to me? All these why questions that can never be answered. Mm. And I realized that, hey, I was just cycling, you know, I was just ruminating with these same questions, these same like, woe is me, you know, why aren't you listening? I was miserable. I was just in such, the only way I can explain it, there really are no words, but I was in this dark, dark, dark hole. And no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't see any way out. And so I kind of like hit rock bottom and I'd never felt that way before in my entire life. And I was like, you know, I was not suicidal, but I was like, I get it. I understand like why people have thoughts of suicide because I can't continue living like this. And that was kind of like my aha moment. Like, Kelsey, your kids can't lose both parents. Mm. You need to get out of this. Like, you need to figure it out. And so that was kind of my turning point. My boys and my family were the catalyst and the motivation for me to get over myself and get moving. That was my catalyst. But now my motivation is me. Because I know that in order for me to be the best mom possible, to show up the best I can in this world, I need to do it for me. I need to put me first. And in doing so, I'll naturally show up for them and be the best mom that I can be.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my goodness. So that whole section you just talked about is a mirror to what my audience deals with, the women listening. And hopefully those of you who are listening really picked up on that because you started with this this like deep need to know why. And most of the time, we will never understand why. Whether it's, you know, why is this happening in my relationship? Or why am I drinking so much when I don't want to? And I've often joked that if somebody asked me, well, why did you overdrink? Well, how long do you have? Because it's a whole long story. And there's all kinds of nooks and crannies to this process. And the loop you were in, the cycle, same thing. They're in this constant cycle. And the realization that at some point we do need a little leverage and a catalyst. And a lot of it is our either relationship with the Lord, when we look at our family and go, wow, my kids really need me, or a huge, you know, potential health scare, something like that. And then, but to get to that point where it has to be us. We have to be the motivation inside of us, that self-trust and that self-leadership, so that we have the ability to turn and help, or to turn and love and guide. So I just saw this beautiful picture of just this humanity of what we truly all experience, no matter what the actual quote unquote issue is. It's gonna look different. But it just shows us what our brain, this is the ego part of the brain, the intellect, that's just, it needs answers and it wants to know why. And that's just sometimes just not possible.
Absolutely. Our mind is a problem solving machine.
Yep.
So it's going to look for problems and it's going to look for answers to those problems. And to be honest with you, Michelle, even if I knew why my husband didn't receive a miracle, I don't think that I would be satisfied with the answer.
Right.
So it doesn't really matter why. I only found peace when I let that go. Mm. When I just accepted what was. And acceptance and grief does not mean that you're okay with the loss. Acceptance and grief means that you accept your reality. You accept what is. And you let go of trying to control and trying to know why.
Yeah, absolutely. And tell me more about what you mean by, and what your story, because it is very different. What did the work look like for you? What was it and what is it that you have as your non-negotiables, as your process for healing?
Well, the first step in grief healing is you have to feel your way through it. In the beginning, I had so much resistance because it's overwhelming. Mm. It's so painful to have a terminal diagnosis to come to someone that is your entire world. There are really no words on how to describe that. So I was overwhelmed with so many different emotions and feelings. And so I resisted that because I didn't want to feel that. I felt like it was breaking me. What was really breaking me was the resistance of it. Mm. It feels like it's counterproductive. It feels counterintuitive because our intuition is to run away from pain. But when you resist it, it makes it so much worse. It increases, it intensifies. And what you run away from chases you. So it just increases the amount of time you're suffering. So that's number one in grief work, is to really work through those feelings and emotions and to not resist and to not place shame and judgment on yourself for what you are experiencing.
Yeah, I was going to say that. it is the feeling and the allowing without judgment. It's like you have to allow the brain to go offline and just experience the expression. And do you find that a lot of times too, there is a lot of comparison? Because you said it when you were first into the victim mindset, like, why me? You know, I'm jealous. Here's this family over here living it up, having their life. Does that come into play too when you're inside of the feeling part of the grief?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I would be lying if I told you that I still don't compare. Like, mm-hmm. I am human. I recognize when I do it. I'll see an elderly couple sitting on a park bench, like holding hands, and it will break my heart because I'll be like, why don't I have that? Mm. Like, how come they get to have it and I don't? Because that was always what we thought was going to happen, right? But I don't beat myself up when that happens. I don't say like, oh, come on, Kelsey, like, you know better. Like, why are you doing that? Like, and it's not like I want that elderly couple to not have it. It's beautiful to see. But yeah, there's comparison with other people that have what you feel like was ripped from you, what you feel like you deserve that you don't have. And then there's comparison within grief. Like, oh, well, you didn't lose someone as close as I did. Or you didn't experience the amount of trauma that I did. There's so much that goes into it. And you cannot compare grief. Mm. The worst grief is the grief that you're experiencing. You can't, that no one wins when you compare. Mm.
Amen.
Because if you have that higher level of grief, then you're really like, that's not winning. So you really can't compare grief. Grief is grief. Everybody's grief is valid. Mm. That's something that I tell my clients from the very beginning. Your grief is valid no matter what. Like, I have clients who say lost their dad and he was 90 years old, and people will minimize their grief. Well, he lived a good life. Like, yep. I mean, he was 90. What did you expect him to live to be forever? Things like that. And it does not matter. The fact that you lost something, because grief, I'm talking in the context of losing someone you love. And that's how I work with grief. Grief is really the loss of anything.
Yep.
And so the fact that you lose something that you value makes your grief valid, period.
Mm. Amen to that, because we're so hard on ourselves, especially when it is someone old, or if we're talking about, it was just a dream I had, or, you know, just the idea of the comparison. I experienced some of that when I was going through a separation, and I saw the reflection from my daughter. I had taken my girls to the beach and it was just the three of us. And we saw, you know, an older couple, and it was very sweet. But I had that reflection of like, oh, huh. Even though this was a decision, because there's where a whole nother layer in conversation comes in, because then we judge ourselves. Because I was part of that decision. Although I was still grieving what at some point I thought would be. And yes. I remember just noticing how that felt. And I noticed that because I'm in the process of my own self working through coaching and my journey and helping others, that immediate thought process of the judgment. And I just kind of, and my kids, I could see we were talking about it too. And then I just found some space and separated myself and had my emotional experience around it. Because if I resisted and said, well, you know, you were a part of this decision for the divorce, so your feelings aren't valid here, then that's so unfair to me. And that would have, I believe, what I know about my own journey now, anytime I did that or tried to judge that, it would put a wall or delay or block my actual healing process. And so we have to practice. I think that's it. We have to practice that. We have to practice being gentle with ourselves and just feeling, because the world, it's just, it goes back to a lot of the worldviews or how you grew up. You know, maybe women grew up in a family. A lot of women experience this. Don't cry. You know, don't allow yourself to feel this way. Like, it's really no big deal. Calm down. You know, why are you getting emotional over this? And so it's an unlearning of those type rules that we have.
Yes, absolutely. And I like how you said you had to practice it, because it absolutely is a practice. It's, but the more you practice it, the easier it becomes. But it is a skill. You have to practice it.
Yep. So what's next after feeling and just allowing yourself to be in the emotion? What's kind of the regular processes that you do?
There are so many things, and there's not like one linear process for grief, because we all grieve differently. We all process grief differently. So there's, I can't give you like a specific, like step by step, but the other thing that's very, very important is self-care and self-compassion. And when I say self-care, I don't mean like bubble baths and spa days. I mean, putting yourself first and really having compassion for what you are experiencing and for what you're going through and how you are coping. And as women, we are really programmed from an early age that we take care of everybody else and we put ourselves last. And if we put ourselves first, especially as mothers, then we're being selfish and we're not being a good mom. And actually the opposite of that is true. Like how I mentioned in the beginning, my catalyst for getting out of that victim mindset was my children. They are no longer my catalyst. They are no longer my motivation. I mean, of course, I want to be a good mother for them, but now I'm to a place where I put me first. And that took a lot of reprogramming, a lot, because that's just not how society influences us. And, but putting myself first is self-care, making sure that I recognize what my needs are and that they are met before I meet the needs of other people. Because you can't pour from an empty vessel. And self-compassion, like treating yourself, like you said, we're so hard on ourselves. Like we're our own worst critic. And being yourself the way you would your best friend. You wouldn't beat up your best friend and be like, oh, you're such a loser. I can't believe that you're thinking this or you're doing that, or you fell off the wagon again. Like, oh my gosh. Like, oh, you would never talk to your friend the way that you talk to yourself. And so just being aware of the words and the thoughts and the way you treat yourself is so important. Especially, always, all the time, but especially when you're grieving or you're going through something that's really difficult.
Yeah. That's been my experience as well. And also with my clients, where some more so than others have that really deep programming, depending on maybe their age bracket and what kind of family unit they grew up in, of sacrifice, sacrifice, sacrifice. However, then they're recognizing, well, I don't really like who I am because when I'm overgiving, I do overdrink or I overcope in other areas, and I'm edgy and I'm resentful. And so it's learning to, it's like kind of, I see, just sort of dialing back what we have been taught and just allowing ourselves to see some new options and say, well, what would it look like if I made sure today that I poured into myself when it relates to some quiet time or some, you know, healthy food or more sleep, so that how much more energy and how much better do I feel now, to where when, you know, I'm at that season of life where I have a 13 and 14 year old and they just love to decide at my bedtime they want to talk to me about something. And it's like, yes, funny how that works out. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to bed inside. But I recognize if I hadn't been taking care of what I needed to throughout the day and got my workout in and my time with the Lord, I'm not going to have the capacity for them. And I'm not going to be a good listener. I'm going to be more snappy, and they're going to feel that. So just something that simple is recognizing, you know, I've got to be available when they want to open up, and I want to feel my best. Yeah.
Yes. And when I say like putting yourself first, of course you're going to, like, your kids' needs and your kids' wants and your spouse, the people around you, of course it's a high priority. Of course you're still going to do things like with the example you gave where you probably wanted to go to bed, but you put that aside to talk to your kids. But exactly like you said, if you don't, you will not have the bandwidth to show up the way that you want to show up. And when you do things out of obligation, it breeds resentment.
Yep.
And so you have to put yourself first in the way that it aligns with your values in the person that you want to be.
This is a great segue to, I want to know, I don't think I asked you this even when we were chatting before. Did you coach before all this happened, or is this what led you into this coaching world?
No, I didn't. I did not. So I am an RN, and I worked in the pediatric ICU. And then my husband was an entrepreneur, and we started, well, he started, I got dragged into it, an aerospace company.
Okay.
So I stopped nursing and helped him with the aerospace company. And so I was not a coach before. When I started dealing with grief, when my husband was diagnosed, I dove into grief. I saw, you know, I went to therapy after he died. I religiously went to grief therapy. And it helped, but it only took me so far. And after a while, I was like, I feel a little better, but like, I just feel so, I'm not happy. Like, I just felt empty. Like, I was just going through the motions. And I was like, my goodness, I cannot live the next 40, 50 years like this. Like, this is not a happy existence. And so I signed up for a life coaching course to be life coach certification. And I remember when I was registered for the course, it was like a nine month course. When I registered for the course, I told the person who was registering me, I was like, I'm not doing this to be a life coach. Like, I'm just doing this to help myself. And she was like, okay, yeah, sometimes we have people do that. And then they'll they like find that they really like this and this is what they want to do. And so they change their mind halfway through the program. I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But like, no, for real. It's like, that's not going to be me. And as I got into the program and I took the life coaching methodologies and processes and combined it with all the grief education that I had gained over the years, it was like the light bulb clicked on when it was like, oh my gosh, like this is life-changing. Like this, why has no one taught me this right. so far? Like what the heck? And so it was kind of at that point, I knew that I couldn't keep this to myself. Mm-hmm. Like that I needed to share it with the world. And so that's how my company Rise with Grief was born. And that's how I got into coaching.
Mm, I love it. It's so cool how, because I mean, that's similar to my story is I did remove the alcohol first. And excuse me, there was many different avenues that I took to explore and different therapy experiences. And I always share, you know, you've got to try different things and see what works for you. But I did always felt like something was missing. Like I wasn't quite being challenged or this ability to dive a little deeper and explore. And I think that's what really led me to my certification program too, was this, it just goes deeper inside of our brain and how our behaviors work and our old stories and patterns and things like that, that were such a piece of my own experience that I had no idea that I was living mm-hmm. in. And it just opened up the opportunity. Same thing. I just like, this is life changing. I can't not help women. I don't know what this looks like. I don't know where it will go. But I was obedient to that. Mine has been a clear call. And clearly for you, having your experience and walking through this, you are the best to support and help because, you know, it helps when someone can come and feel seen and feel heard from someone who has walked in similar shoes. So how do you help women? And before we go, we'll share all your links and all, but how do you help? Are you, you just allow them to come into a one-on-one experience with you for a period of time?
So I have two different coaching programs. I do offer one-on-one coaching, and grief, like I said, is complicated and complex, and it's not something that can be rushed.
Right.
So both my programs are 12 weeks long. So if someone comes into my one-on-one coaching program, we meet every week for approximately 50 minutes to an hour. And we do that for 12 weeks. And I set them, the way that I set it up is so that at the end of the 12 weeks, they have a grasp on how to handle their grief and how to self-cope and how to self-coach and how to cope. Because in grief, the pain, I can't take the pain away. Like the pain is inevitable. There's so much suffering that can be avoided by the tools and techniques that I teach my clients. So at the end of the 12 weeks, they really have a handle on when those grief waves hit, when life does get challenging, they know how to handle it so that they don't spiral out of control. And so that they can anticipate it coming. You can't always anticipate the grief wave. Sometimes they come out of left field and you are like, what just happened? Where did that come from? But sometimes you can anticipate it, like the holidays or the death anniversary. If you're going, you know, if I'm going to a wedding, like that's probably going to be triggering for me. You know, I can take preemptive steps so that it's not terrible, so I can manage the experience better. So that's my one-on-one. I do offer 12-week group coaching, which is a very similar framework to an information as I give in one-on-one. It's just in a group setting, and we do group coaching. So it's, instead of it being like private, it's in a group setting, which is great because there's grief needs connection. It's such, it can be such a lonely, lonely, lonely place to be. And in the group setting, you, even if you're not the one being coached, even if you're quietly sitting in the background, there's so much benefit from hearing other people going through the same thing and experiencing the same thing as you and knowing like, oh my gosh, I'm not alone. Mm. Like, I'm not going crazy. Yeah, so it's really just what people, what they need, what their comfort level is. My group coaching is not like a typical grief group. I tried the grief groups, like in my town, and that just was not for me. It was depressing, just sitting around listening to everybody, you know, talk about their horrible stories and crying. It was just, it brought me down. It wasn't for me. Some people, it's very helpful. Everybody's different. If someone is not quite sure if one-on-one coaching or group coaching is best for them, I do offer a free 45-minute session where we can hop on Zoom and I have a discussion with them and we figure out the best pathway forward for them.
Great. Yeah, I love that because, you know, I have different options as well. And it is, there is that power of when we meet in a group setting, Zoom, it is just this, oh, wow, you know, I'm not alone. And mm-hmm. I love how when someone else is sharing, the people listening can benefit greatly as well. Yes. By seeing, you know, how it's addressed and how it's navigated, but then also to just feel there is that we need connection, period. That's mm-hmm. how we're designed.
Absolutely.
So awesome. Well, thank you for being here and sharing your story. And I love what you do and how you help women. Can you just share where they can find you? What's the best place to go to find you?
Yeah, so I do have a website. It's www.risewithgrief.com. On there, I have a blog. I have different grief resources and insights. You can sign up to get my weekly emails and also get my free grief guide. On social media, I can be found on Facebook, just Kelsey Jaeger. And on Instagram, it's kelsey.jaeger.
Awesome. Well, thank you for being here and sharing with my audience. I appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey friend, before you go, I want to make sure that you know about the free masterclass that is available for you. It's the 5 steps to help you stop overdrinking without stress and overwhelm. Download it for free today at setfreesisterhood.com/masterclass. I would love for you to come join the Facebook community too. I will put the link in the show notes. And if you're ready to see what support would look like so that you could start walking out your future of being alcohol free and stepping into the woman who God is calling you to be, email me at michelle@setfreesisterhood.com. Until next time, stay blessed.